Welcome to LedgerCast, a podcast about the cryptocurrency ecosystem. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and my co-host is Josh Olsiewicz. Today is purely a news episode. There's just so much going on. We decided to split this one in two. So this part is all about the news of the week, Bitcoin Cash on Coinbase, Charlie Lee dumping his Litecoin, and all the other interesting things going on. I hope you enjoy it. And we're going to have a follow-up episode that we've already recorded where we cover technical topics. This week, we focused on trading strategies with looking at US dollar charts versus Bitcoin charts. That'll be out real soon. Hope you catch them both. If you like this podcast, you can give it a 5-star rating and even review it would be better on iTunes or in Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. We would appreciate that very much if you enjoy it. With that said, let's get to the conversation. All right. Hello and welcome to episode 2, our third episode, because programmers start with zero sometimes, and that's where my background is. So this is episode 2 of LedgerCast. I'm here with my regular co-host, Josh Olsiewicz. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Brian. How's it going?
I am doing well. We were pretty excited to talk about some technical indicators and trading stuff today, and here we are, another news-based episode. So I think we're going to try to sneak in maybe some technical talk in a separate episode. But for now, we have a lot of news to discuss. It's been a hectic 48 hours or so, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's been interesting, to say the least.
Yeah. And I guess the topics that we're discussing today, which is kind of old stuff, but new in the news, which is Bitcoin Cash, its rollout on exchanges, and some other things around this. But the way it went down was not the way that we would have expected, I guess. So we're going to go over what the heck happened. We've had a lot of people asking us questions on Twitter and whatnot to try to explain the lay of the land with Bitcoin Cash being listed on Coinbase, not just for distribution, but also for trading, buying, deposits, whatever else. So let's go back, I guess, a little bit to the beginning and talk about what Coinbase's stance was on Bitcoin Cash when it forked in the summer, to be able to prepare listeners for what's going on now.
Yeah, I think what they said was, we're not going to give it to you now. We're going to actually not give it to you at all. And that stance later changed after threat of lawsuit. from what I can remember anyway, that it started as we're not going to support it, blah, blah, blah. And then it quickly shifted to we're going to give it to you January 1st. We'll have it ready. Why that date? I don't know. And that's kind of where they left it.
Yeah, I think it said maybe by January 1st. Okay. I've seen different things on that. But that's one thing I think is worth potentially noting to not misconstrue what was in that help doc, because I think it said we'll make available for distribution by January 1st. But what was relatively important was that they even had a roadmap, apparently, just published a few days ago, that didn't notate that buy, sell, deposit functionality would be included. It would just be the ability to withdraw tokens that people were eligible for based on having their Bitcoin stored on Coinbase or GDAX. So the expectation was Bitcoin Cash would be made available to those people, then they could withdraw it and do whatever they want with it, but it wouldn't be a trading pair. The surprise came when, with zero pre-announcement or lead up or anything, and also the distribution of coins had not happened, they suddenly made an announcement that Bitcoin Cash was available just like any other of their trading pairs, Ethereum, Litecoin, Bitcoin. So that's what caused the start of mayhem.
And it's important to know like what they said and when, even though like we might say things that they didn't exactly say. So like I'm pretty sure they said withdrawal will be available by January 1st, which means not trading at all, you know. And not only that, but on December 15th, which was a few days ago, they said, according to the roadmap, it was X'd out, you know, no trading is going to be allowed. So that was like recently. But even last week, you know, I said two things that came to mind immediately when all this went down. The first one being that they were going to add Bitcoin Cash no matter what. And we'll get to the other exchanges, what they did. But again, that's a poor business decision just to not add it, you know, just in a vacuum. They're going to add it no matter what. So I was ready for that. And the second point was the when I was talking about when Coinbase and GDAX makes decisions trading wise or exchange wise that not everyone's going to agree with, like, where's the line there? And that was a perfect example yesterday of very poor decision making by anyone involved in that process. specifically Adam White, who runs the exchange, who undoubtedly signed off on that series of events. And getting back to what the other exchanges did, we can look at Bitfinex, Bittrex, Bitstamp. It's not like this is the first time coins have been released.
Right.
You know? So what did they all do? They either said, leading up to the event, what they were going to do, or gave some lead time, like you said. In Bitstamp's case, I think they announced it like a week before. I don't really remember. But you can't just like at a 7 o'clock Eastern on a Tuesday, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Tuesday?
I was picking up pizza for dinner and just got obliterated with incoming news. And then, of course, the inevitable price action on everything else. And I know they can't make all their decisions based on price action, I guess, but they have advocated the importance for stability in the past. And this was like an anti-stability move. So one thing is people that they, let's say someone had Bitcoin back when the Bitcoin Cash fork happened, their Bitcoin was not pre-distributed to them when trading went live. So the people, Coinbase customers, GDAX customers, that could have essentially provided the order books to establish liquidity and prevent this massive price swinging didn't even have their stuff distributed to them. So the only things...
I've heard both sides of that. I've heard people say it was distributed. I've heard people say it wasn't distributed.
I know it's been distributed now, but I'm not sure that it was distributed like at the time of trading or whatever.
I'm pretty sure it was to some people, at least based on what I saw.
Okay.
But that's another inconsistency. Like, that's the moral of the story, just inconsistencies across the board.
Either way, liquidity was not developed clearly because they were forced. Yeah, they were forced to shut down trading, I think, within 4 minutes, and price had swung because forever, as long as people have been talking about what's going to be listed next on Coinbase, pretty much everybody that I've seen is like their strategy was going to be go and market buy it, just wait for the price to go up. So there were probably however many market purchases of Bitcoin Cash to eat the order book on the sell side, and the price went up to 9, 10, 11,000, something ridiculous like that. And then by the time trading shut off, then the price froze in time over $9,000. So that's what people were seeing as this news was breaking. So it was just a total mess, and they shut down trading and then did a series of updates on their status blog talking about now what. So what I don't understand personally is, like, they had meetings about this surely about how to roll this out. So like these are like you said, other exchanges have already been through it. They waited 6 months to go through this process, and it was an atrociously performed process that brings about all sorts of other fallout considerations that come to the table now.
Yeah. And, it immediately makes me want to leave Coinbase. I just haven't yet, but I completely plan on leaving Coinbase. I meant to ask you how the Gemini setup went, because that's where I'm headed, essentially, at this point.
Yeah. So for me personally, several things worried me about this. And at the moment, at least, I don't personally feel super comfortable recommending Coinbase, because it's just the way... Insider trading, we can get into this. Insider trading stuff aside, the rollout was poor. Also the incredibly late distribution of these coins was poor. I don't know. I mean, they just keep stacking the cards against them, even though, like, it's one of those companies that I would love to love. You know, it's right now is the easiest way to onboard cash, but I'm worried about several things. And so I actually created an account on Gemini and went through the process of getting verified on there, and it was pretty smooth so far. So if that goes well, I guess my recommendations for how to onboard new people will change. So let's get in a little bit to the accusations of insider trading. And I want to be careful because I don't want to say insider trading definitely happened, but there was a ton of volume before this happened. I guess that the notes I saw were after 11 a.m. or after 2 p.m., something like that. Prior to the announcement, enormous new volume indicating that there might have been a leak. Brian Armstrong, is he the CEO still? The founder of Coinbase, made a blog post that they were going to be doing an investigation. What really hit home for me is a Nick Szabo retweeting someone essentially calling out Coinbase for possible insider trading. And it's like, wow, you know, like this isn't someone that speaks up a lot. He's maybe Satoshi. Maybe.
He retweeted quite a few, actually, you know, talking crap about Coinbase, which I thought was great.
Yeah. So all of these things are concerning. And you know more than I do about how the whole maybe insider trading rumors came about. And this is related to volume and price action, but also apparently some Telegram stuff. Do you know kind of the TLDR of this?
I mean, there's no doubt insider trading happens everywhere all the time, always in crypto. And there's no doubt in my mind that it happened in this case and to some effect. Like, it's impossible to not happen. Mm-hmm. Like, they're, especially in the way that they, you know, it's like when your professor is, I'm going to relate this back to college, but my professor used to say, you know, if you cheat on a test, it's not your fault, it's my fault. I'm allowing it to happen. I need to mitigate that from happening. So, you know, what the professor would do is give us different colored tests and different ordered questions to prevent this from happening. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what could GDAX have done to prevent insider trading? You know, I don't know, like announce it a week before ahead of time, give us some lead time, you know, whatever. Like, that's pretty obvious, I think, to everybody. Is it going to be easy to prove that it was insider trading? I don't think so, especially because this was the other thing. Bitcoin was already pulling back as they were announcing this. So I'm thinking, you know, are they announcing this as Bitcoin is pulling back? Because that's pretty coincidental. But,
yeah,
you know, I think software updates are generally on a Tuesday anyway. I don't know. You probably know more about that than I do. But
the software, yeah, you know, you mean in terms of why you time things in a certain.
Yeah, isn't like Tuesday like the typical update time for everything for like software?
No, it's kind of a organizational thing. So maybe they maybe they do it at the close of a trading day. I don't know.
Okay.
It just depends. But yeah.
Yes, it was information leaked. Of course it was. Like, there's no doubt. Can you prove it? Probably not. Is anything going to be done about it? Probably not. From the insider trading perspective, I think more is going to be done about the rollout and those concerns than insider trading. That's my opinion anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm not a lawyer, so who knows? I think we're going to see plenty of complaints to CFTC, SEC, FDIC, whoever, you know, alphabet soup of agencies are going to get involved in this in some way.
So there was something I saw saying that because they are providing price information for Bitcoin to the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, CME, which is providing futures products, that may make them liable if there is manipulation going on the Bitcoin price and therefore could reduce the CME's confidence in their pricing mechanisms and potentially cause some consequences. Do you know more about that? And then also, does that create essentially a gateway for regulatory bodies to possibly step in and do some investigations here as well?
I don't know much about the CME stuff, but you know, it's impossible to think that regulatory agencies aren't going to step in at some point with something, period. Like, you know, we can all think this is happy duty la la land to where the regulatory agencies just turn a blind eye forever. But regardless of what any of us think, they're coming, especially with the Wall Street involvement. And you know, when antics like that get pulled, this is a unicorn company, okay? When antics like that get pulled, it's just like, oh man, it makes me feel just gross, you know? Like, I hate Bitcoin Cash, whatever, but what Coinbase did and continues to do is just like unbelievable. I was joking last night, like, when are they going to just delist Bitcoin? Because that's where it's headed. They're just going to say, you know what, the fees are too much, we're going to get rid of Bitcoin. Like, that seems crazy, but to me, like, that's the next step here down the road. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it seems kind of beyond crazy to me personally, but we've seen a lot of, well, we've seen a lot of crazy things.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was somebody that I think there was a Twitter thread where they either worked for CME or knew people that worked for CME, and the talk of lost confidence was there. I don't know if that is going to really matter or what will come of this. Usually in these situations, it's easier to make a huge deal out of something than to treat it with some degree of caution and like not being as big of a deal as it seems at first. So I kind of feel like this will level out a little bit, but at the same time, it doesn't mean that some of these underlying issues don't exist and that it may end up being a big deal, even though it'll level out in the near term. So,
and again, back to the meetings they had leading up to this, it's like, what did they think would happen? They didn't give you enough time to even send your Bitcoin Cash from other exchanges to their exchange.
Yeah.
Like, what did they think was going to happen? And they make it live, and again, it's 7 p.m. On a Tuesday Eastern. Like, what? Who, like, again, like, where is the sanity check here for, like, what the hell's going on? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's what I really don't get operationally. And I know dealing with things in a startup is hard, but this is kind of 101. Like, I've not been in crypto very long, but I feel like I could have predicted some of the issues that were quickly revealed here with this rollout. Like, this isn't that complicated. So, I don't know. Hot mess. Let's get into what happened with the price action, both in terms of Bitcoin and in terms of mm-hmm. Bitcoin Cash. And we should note that I think they just opened up. So GDAX, after closing it after like 4 minutes, then it was shut down. It's been maybe 18 hours now since they mm-hmm. shut down. I think they just opened it back up this morning. So what's going on with price action? How are these two things correlated? How should we be thinking about that?
Well, immediately, you know, you saw Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is already falling. I was already prepared for it to touch the 4-hour Kijun on technicals on the cloud. My bids were ready. My fiat was ready. So it got hit. I was happy. The event is the event. You know, it's mm-hmm. whatever. But it allowed me to sell above 19 and buy below 17, around 16.5, something like that.
Yeah.
So to me, it was like, great. In that respect, I think we talked about this before, but Bitcoin Cash being added anywhere is a boon to Bitcoin Cash, you know? It's bullish in every regard. That's not just Bitcoin Cash, that's any coin. I don't think the airdrop being unlocked is bullish for Bitcoin Cash because people are going to be selling.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when they see this, like, you know, this thing at $3,000 each and they have like 10 of them. Like, what are you going to do? I mean, I don't know. I've already sold mine, so I can't really speak to what other people are going to be doing here. I bought the Bitcoin dip. I would be selling my Bitcoin Cash if I had any at the premium that it's probably going to be listed at.
Yeah.
Looks like it's around 4,300 right now on GDAX post only mode.
And it's about 3,800 on Kraken or other exchanges. So it's already at a premium on GDAX and probably 100% of that price increase. So it was 1,800 12 hours ago or basically when the announcement was made. So it's mm-hmm. essentially doubled in price on other exchanges on this news for several reasons. One, like you said, it just provides a new avenue for buying, selling, trading, depositing Bitcoin Cash, but also potentially in the giving legitimacy to the coin as like something people should be using. I've seen people mm-hmm. saying this is a Litecoin killer. So if Bitcoin Cash becomes the transaction Bitcoin and Bitcoin is the store of value Bitcoin, I don't know. Makes no sense to me as that argument personally, but maybe there's sense to the Litecoin is less relevant now argument. So either way, it's doubled in price. So the people that have been long on Bitcoin Cash since, let's see, late October are doing quite well because it was trading as low as $300. So they've mm-hmm. they've 10x versus USD since late October.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to several people, like regular consumers, that they're confused about what Bitcoin Cash is. They may be, they may be aware of the scaling issues with Bitcoin. So they think maybe this is like a fix for that. I've talked to someone very recently that even not only did they keep the Bitcoin Cash that they got from the fork, but when they've bought Bitcoin since then and they've tried to keep parity with Bitcoin Cash, so essentially hedging their own bet by maintaining both, which I thought was an interesting argument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with any of that other than the educational new trader thing. That's my biggest issue. You know, if you're going to be an altcoin, that's fine. But if you're going to try to steal the brand and create brand confusion and mess with the wallet addresses, and have people sending, you know, Bitcoin Cash to Bitcoin addresses, things like that. That's a serious issue that needs to be addressed. That won't be addressed, I'm sure, by them, because that's the tactic that they're using.
Yeah, and to me, that's why, and I think pretty clear, but full disclosure, I don't think either of us are proponents of Bitcoin Cash. And to me, that's really it. Like, I trade altcoins all the time. I like altcoins. I think some of them have a very promising fundamental future. Mm-hmm. To me, it's not about altcoins. It's not even fully about governance. There's all sorts of different governance models that have pros and cons. And I don't love theirs because of the centralization. But to me, it comes down to this concept of confusing users and what seems very clear that Roger Ver especially wants Bitcoin Cash to be Bitcoin. To him, it is the real Bitcoin, according to the white paper, peer-to-peer cash, whatever these arguments he uses. Plenty of people have given him an avenue to give those arguments. But what doesn't fly with me personally, while I won't trade it, I won't support it, and I'll actively give my opinions against it until this shows otherwise, is when you try to take over the Bitcoin name. Someone can do that, but there's an element of social responsibility within a community. If people want the crypto community to do well, I'm an ideologue. So to me, that means not trading it, not supporting it, essentially, not being in favor of the network, because I don't see any benefits to the long-term health of the crypto economy if we can't say Bitcoin is Bitcoin. You know, like Bitcoin Cash needs to not be going after the Bitcoin name. If they weren't trying to steal Bitcoin, they would be fine calling it something like Bcash or whatever. But trying to call it Bitcoin Cash, displaying it as the top option on Bitcoin.com, like these are all what I would say are relatively malicious acts by the people involved in Bitcoin Cash. And in addition to that, you've shown plenty of evidence over time that a lot of the spamming of the Bitcoin network with zero fee or low fee transactions or low value transactions. And there's been accusations of spoofing order books that all lead back to these same players. So not only is someone creating confusion, they're also trying to create malicious disruption of the existing Bitcoin network. So to me, that's a threat to the overall economy big enough to where I don't care if it brings profit in the near term. To me, that's short-sighted, because these are people that are trying to essentially wage war against the Bitcoin proper network.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And it's pretty obvious the way that they're promoting certain sides of the argument, like, you know, the fees thing, and not talking about the fact that there was this huge backlog of, like you said, no fee transactions. It just stinks. It all stinks, man.
Yeah, none of it smells good. It worries me. It's probably the most bearish fundamental indicator for me when I'm thinking about the overall health of the crypto ecosystem.
Yeah,
it definitely,
you know, the other part of it is let's look at Bitcoin Cash. It's got 8 megabyte blocks, but yet they have unconfirmed transactions in our mining blocks less than, you know, 0.2 megabytes, whatever it is. So, you know, if the Bitcoin Cash crowd thinks Geon and Bitmain and Antpool are this benevolent entity coming to save Bitcoin, I highly doubt that. They're just amoral miners like anybody else who are trying to get as much profit as they can out of the system.
And for what it's worth, being an amoral miner is part of the description of what makes Bitcoin strong. Being trustless is what makes Bitcoin strong. So one of the things to essentially maintain sanity in the network and to keep it operating functionally, this is where development teams come in. So what I expressed this morning in some Twitter stuff was that I hope, and I know there's proposals out there, but I hope there's some serious effort given from a development perspective to essentially enable Bitcoin Core, if you will, to fight back against malicious behavior, including these transaction spamming and other stuff that's going on. Part of this whole thing of like people saying it's the true Bitcoin, big blocks, whatever, they're not using the blocks. And technologically, there's nothing advantageous to Bitcoin Cash because it's a clone of Bitcoin. So they're not introducing anything that's technically better. They're just introducing a network that is not being used, therefore is faster. And I don't understand why that is considered a promotion.
Right. It's like, let's compare Bitcoin to any other coin where no one's using it. Of course, the fees are lower.
Yeah.
Like, that just seems obvious to me. Like, yeah, fees are high. Fees are a problem, but SegWit isn't rolled out everywhere. And that's another thing. I talked to somebody about, you know, what is Coinbase going to add first, SegWit or Bitcoin Cash? And I was pretty convinced it was Bitcoin Cash then. So it's no shocker, again, that it's happening now. And could you imagine them listing Bitcoin Cash before their blog post about SegWit a few days ago?
Yeah.
Like, even looking back at that series of events, I was like, oh, wow, like, that's interesting. And of course, they had to say something on SegWit then, because if they didn't, there'd be a firestorm now if they hadn't even said anything about it. So that was interesting, too.
Yeah, basically, so the Coinbase SegWit conversation is fascinating because, again, the Coinbase's stance in all this versus what the people behind Bitcoin Cash are doing, these are kind of different, but maybe their incentives are a little more aligned, I guess. But Coinbase has long advocated need for scaling. They were big proponents of SegWit 2x, yet they aren't supporting SegWit. Brian Armstrong that went on CNBC and said that it wasn't a top five concern of their customers. And then very shortly after that, I don't know in response to what, they made a blog post saying that actually in 2018, they are going to introduce SegWit. I don't know why in 2018, and that's over 6 months, maybe up to a year of time, when I've heard other reports that people have been able to enable SegWit in a matter of days. And a lot of the code changes that may be necessary to enable SegWit are open source. Anyway, so if the problem is speed and transaction fees, there's a Hacker Noon article that was shared. I think Tone Vase shared this recently. And in that Hacker Noon article, that's kind of an overall explanation of some things going on in Bitcoin. It notes that a SegWit transaction right now would save 30 to 40% on transaction fees right off the bat. And because of the way SegWit works and the speed of transactions, the unconfirmed transactions backlog that exists would disappear incredibly quickly if SegWit were enabled. And then add to that the fact that Coinbase is responsible for such a large percentage of overall transaction volume. They alone, just enabling SegWit, could have a big impact.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate problem here, is that Coinbase is too big in the ecosystem. And the reason we need other players like Square Cash, and or the Cash App, and Circle, their crypto app that's coming. Because if Coinbase had competition, people would just flee immediately because there'd be no reason to stay. But the fact that it's too comfortable to be on Coinbase right now is the major, major problem that I see.
Yeah. And I know we'll definitely have some listeners that are newer. So we've been saying SegWit without defining it, but can you give a brief overview of like what it even means to enable SegWit and what changes in terms of on transactions?
Sure. So it kind of repackages what the transaction looks like. And what that does is make the size of the transaction smaller. And by making the size of the transaction smaller, you take up less space in the block, and therefore your fee goes down accordingly. That's how I understand it anyway. Now, there's some issues for some people that I don't completely understand, where if you use SegWit, you can't prove that you've sent the transaction. I don't know if you've heard anything about that angle before, but I haven't really looked into it. I know that's like a big part of the anti-SegWit crowd is all about that argument.
Yeah, well, there's just certain, I guess, like header information that's removed. So I guess some of that information, the critique would be that it's necessary to prove that has occurred. But all in all, this underwent an incredible amount of testing. It also was deployed on other coin networks. And there was even a bounty that Charlie Lee gave to say, okay, well, go ahead and crack it, break it, do whatever you want, and you get to keep all this Litecoin that was worth millions of dollars. And that never occurred. So those are pretty decent real life scenarios of why it shouldn't be a problem. But nevertheless, there are valid critiques. That's why also it's optional. So it is a scaling improvement, but it's not like someone has to use it. So in Coinbase's example, they don't have to use it. But if one of their concerns is network scaling, then they have the option to be a part of that and improve it. And for various reasons, different business entities are choosing not to do so. The adoption still exists, but it's not been like a rapid adoption.
Yeah, it's around like 10% right now for the network as a whole. But there are several players. Like, I don't even know what to call Coinbase in like the interchange system, but they're a key intersection of the network, unfortunately. So when they don't bring something on board, it doesn't happen for a large part of the network. Even though they were so pro SegWit 2x, you'd think they'd be ready to go for SegWit, considering SegWit 2x involves SegWit, but they aren't. And like we were saying, you know, is this some kind of war? What do you think? I think Coinbase is very anti-Bitcoin from everything we've seen. But what do you think?
I I want to be able to assume the best, essentially, and say, I think Coinbase is incentivized to support the crypto economy as a whole. They do various things that are weird to me. Like, they really don't like to talk about Bitcoin specifically. They like to talk about digital assets broadly. I don't know if that's because of their intention to support the greater crypto ecosystem, but like, they really seem to go out of their way to essentially not give Bitcoin credit as like Papa Bear, basically. And that includes things like the Coinbase founders openly talking about how Bitcoin has broken their heart in the past, again, around scaling issues, and that they'd sold most of their Bitcoin and most of their net value as an individual. This is Brian Armstrong, is in Ethereum now. So like, there's all these things that indicate an anti-Bitcoin mentality, or maybe them seeing Bitcoin either as a threat to their own businesses, their own wealth, or the ecosystem as a whole. I'm open to understanding better why they believe that. Personally, I believe Bitcoin is pivotal to the success of the broader economy. I think if you talk about where brand recognition is, like, it's probably not in cryptocurrencies broadly. It's probably strongly in the hands of Bitcoin itself. To me, the denominating currency makes sense to be Bitcoin and not either nothing or the US dollar or whatever you want to say. Like, it makes sense for Bitcoin to be the primary thing. And I do see the scaling issues. So I, you know, like, obviously Bitcoin needs to be able to scale. Like, it's not going to meet these grand goals of worldwide adoption for all these different use cases, scenarios, whatever, if it can't scale itself. But this is kind of early days of the web, and you have a great opportunity to do to make changes that could be really bad or could be really good. So making those changes carefully makes sense to me. I do agree sometimes, like, it seems like the hesitation of change has been slower than necessary, but the consequences are growing exponentially. So I don't know. It seems maybe warish, but at the same time, I don't want to assume a war footing from like Coinbase per se, but from someone like Roger Ver, it does seem very warlike footing to me. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I can't assume a war, but there's all this evidence that is stacking up quickly. You know, they're supporting every contentious hard fork. They're supporting scaling moves and then refusing to roll them out themselves. Like, it doesn't make logical sense to me, other than they're just trying to bring the thing down. And the Ethereum connection's interesting because, and I'm not even like a conspiratorial type person, but to see them support Ethereum in such a way, even when they first released it. And then I think Silicon Valley broadly is so pro Ethereum. It almost turned their backs to Bitcoin, oddly. I don't know why or when, other than the fact that they got in on Ethereum early on. That's really all that I can think of. I don't really know. Like you said, like, you'd think they'd want to talk about Bitcoin, support Bitcoin, be all about it. But anytime they have a chance to make the right decision, they make the wrong decision.
Yeah.
And I don't think listing Bitcoin Cash is the wrong decision. It's just the way they went about it. Completely the wrong decision.
Yeah. I mean, like, Bitcoin Cash is on several exchanges that I use, support, whatever. That's mm-hmm. not the issue. I don't think an exchange necessarily needs to take some massively political position in the listing mm-hmm. of it. It's just the way Coinbase went about it is pretty baffling to me. Nevertheless, that's kind of the the way I see things personally, and I'm new to the space, so this is all this is me trying to make sense of it. But that's what I've seen so far.
One last thing about scaling. So I talked to a few of the core devs just day to day, randomly, and I feel like most of them are like Ents in Lord of the Rings, where it's just like, there's a pressing issue happening, but we're going to believe in the science, and we're going to let the science be the science, and we're going to use measures that are calculated and tested and risk averse, you know. And they kind of have to be at this point with the market cap being what it is. You can't just mess around with a 300 billion, 250, whatever it is at the moment, and growing. You can't just mess around with that and expect the boat not to be rocked a lot, you know what I mean? So I understand their position as well. It's painful to sit through and watch, considering what could be happening as far as increasing block size or things like that, supporting hard forks. Like I said in a tweet the other day, you know, Core needs to update their roadmap for scaling on their website. So I hope they're going to do that in 2018, because most of what's on there now has already been done, SegWit, Lightning, things like that. So we'll see. But the Core devs are completely, I wouldn't say apathetic, I think that's too strong of a word, but they are dead set on the mission of being completely risk averse and taking things slowly.
Yeah, one of the critiques I've seen from other people that are retail investors, if you will, these are friends of mine that they know I'm into this ecosystem, so they ask me questions sometimes, or they just wonder like what's going on. Even if they don't agree with the way Bitcoin Cash is doing things, I've been asked several times like, well, where is the Bitcoin Core development team? Like, where are they? Where's their message? You know, like, and or is there one? And I think it's safe, relatively safe to say right now there's just not much of one. And you know, there were these attempts at the Bitcoin Foundation to essentially play this role. Hilariously enough, like Roger Ver was a member of that. If people watch the Netflix documentary about banking on Bitcoin, it talks a little bit about the politics of the creation of the foundation and everything else. But it seems to me there would be some benefit, even if it's not like a centralized foundation, which was a big critique of it. If it was just a, I don't know what you call it, like community groups, user groups that were able to offer a unified voice, maybe that would be beneficial for Bitcoin, the Core software. To me, that seems like a current weakness. It's essentially this marketing arm that exists on a lot of altcoins with their governance systems, but doesn't really exist for Bitcoin proper.
Yeah, I definitely agree. But I think, again, they're going to tell you that it shouldn't need marketing. Like, it's just going to be a thing. It's going to survive or die on its own. Like, that's just my feeling of what I'm reading from them, based on what I'm seeing. You know, Adam back in Blockstream needs a PR person. Like, I don't know what he's doing on Twitter most of the time, even bothering responding to a lot of these people. And it's pretty clear to me that like Roger Ver has some sort of PR team handling his Twitter as well at this point, which is fine. Like, I recommend that for everybody. If they're at that huge of a, you know, if you're the CEO of Bitcoin.com, you need a PR person at that point, right?
CEO of Bitcoin.com. I know people have been joking about, can you be the CEO of a website? The world I come from, that's actually okay. especially where there's confusion sometimes between the .org and .com versions of things. This is highly common in my world with open source software, specifically around WordPress. Like, WordPress.org and WordPress.com are not the same thing. So I actually kind of understand that element, so, which is funny. But nevertheless, it's different.
Again, I get the point, but it's a part of like the brand confusion, brand theft. You know, it's like, I'm the CEO of Bitcoin.com. It's like, it's just silly to me. Like, why? And the fact that you need to say it every single time, it's like, it reminds me of Game of Thrones when, what's her name? The white-haired
Khaleesi.
Queen. Khaleesi. When she comes in, they have to like roll off her titles every time she talks. It's just like, we get it. We know, okay? Like, again, this is you trying to establish and assert your authority over people in some way. It's just nauseating, honestly.
Yeah. So there are many other things, that even to the point of CNBC conspiracies. Maybe we don't need to get into that, but...
Oh, man. That is very clear that there's some connections, interesting connections there that are currently being written about as we speak.
I don't want to speak the names because I haven't done a lot of research on this myself, but it seems like there are some very interesting ties that exist there.
Yeah, for sure.
In short, one of the things that you get when you have a network, and I think the best way to describe something like Bitcoin is as a network, is where you have people that it's designed in a way for them to not trust one another, and where being even enemies to an extent or being self-serving is designed into the entire ecosystem. This is perhaps expected behavior if something is designed in that way in order to create a trustless system that doesn't rely on a central authority. So people that get really worried about like what they're seeing, this is probably a natural phenomenon of sorts. when you're playing with a system like this. Like, you're not trusting a government or a corporation or whatever. So this is some of what exists. So educating yourself around like what it all means is probably important.
Yeah, and most people don't have time to do that, and I don't blame them. So they just listen to the loudest voice in the room, who happens to be Roger Ver at the moment, which is, again, why Bitcoin, real Bitcoin, needs some sort of voice of some kind from somebody. That's, you know, kind of what I think us as a community is our responsibility. At least I kind of see that as my responsibility, is, you know, spreading the good word here and talking about what needs to be talked about that isn't being talked about.
Yeah, I had several people, after I shared my thoughts about this on Twitter, saying I was either butthurt or needed to calm down or like whatever. And I was like, I wasn't saying anything in a like overly emotional way, just trying to say it how I see it, because I agree with you. To me, it's people within the ecosystem that have a stake in the ecosystem. It's their responsibility to share why they think something is good or bad or threatening or whatever. So I was just trying to show that myself as best that I can, and the way that, as best as I can see it. So let's jump into another topic, which is going from something without a leader to our knowledge, Satoshi is dormant. But Satoshi Lite is not. So Charlie Lee is the founder, creator of Litecoin, which is a Bitcoin fork done the right way, if you will. So Litecoin has gained popularity. It's also another candidate for getting around these transaction issues and fee issues that people have experienced with Bitcoin. I've sent money exchange to exchange with Litecoin this week. Also Dogecoin, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah, my Dogecoin gained one or two Satoshis in value while it was in the air. So that was nice. Anyway, so Charlie Lee has, I think, over time probably felt some of the pain of being a public face for a cryptocurrency and been accused of trying to manipulate price or all these other things. I think most of that is unwarranted. As far as I can tell, Charlie Lee seems like one of the good guys in terms of his intentions are always pretty good. He made a surprise announcement right around the exact same time as all this stuff with Bitcoin Cash was going on. His announcement was that he dumped all his Litecoin. So like he...
But from a PR perspective, though, like he did the most amazing decision possible, you know? Yeah. Announced something... That was this huge news while some other massive news is happening. So you like... I don't know the term for that because I'm not in like marketing and PR, but there's got to be like a note.
Well, there's a Friday news dump, or there's also just a new, you want to take out the trash is what it's called. So you take out the trash, which is news you really want to be hidden. I don't think he was doing that. He actually even updated it because I think all this Bitcoin Cash stuff came out right after he did it.
But he could have waited, or I don't know. Like, yeah. It just seemed pretty ironic that it all happened at the same time.
So taking out the trash with the news is usually that putting things out that you don't want to be seen. The best days to do it are like the day before Thanksgiving and the day before Christmas. And then if it's on a regular schedule, it would be like a Friday afternoon when all the journalists and whoever else are going home.
Gotcha.
So it does look a little bit like that. I don't think it was intended. But Charlie Lee wrote a post on Reddit disclosing that over the past several days, he has sold all his Litecoin. He said that he tries to stay away from price-related tweets, but it's hard because price is an important aspect of Litecoin's growth. And he refuted the fact that some people think he's shorted Litecoin in the past, which is funny. And he said that in the past days, he sold and donated all of his Litecoin. It's been good to him financially, so he's well off enough to no longer need to tie his financial success to Litecoin's success. So he owns no Litecoin now, and he donated it. He didn't say where he donated it. Pretty interesting news, pretty weird news. I'm not quite sure what to think about it. I think I have thoughts, but what are your initial thoughts or concerns? Good thing, bad thing? Don't care?
I was pretty shocked when I saw that, honestly, because if any other dev did that, it wouldn't be bullish. Like Novogratz said on Twitter, if Vitalik sells all his Ethereum, that's not a bullish sign. But, you know, like we were saying the other day, that's got to be weighing on Charlie Lee's shoulders when people talk to him about price action and price movement. And again, that's another reason for him to just avoid Twitter and get a PR person so that he doesn't have to deal with that. I think he's too like humble and down to earth to want to have a non-connection with people, you know, in that way. And I agree. I don't think he did it in any malicious regard. But if it was his brother, I'd say for sure. His brother's a snake. His brother's a complete snake in the grass. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
Charlie's brother.
Especially.
Bobby Lee. He runs a Chinese exchange and business around Bitcoin and stuff. And he... He and Charlie have been at odds over various Bitcoin issues around scaling and other things, to give people some perspective on that.
Yeah. And I meant to check the Litecoin subreddit to see what people were saying about this, because
I think
I'm sure there's plenty.
The most valid critique that I saw, most of it was a bunch of garbage. The most valid critique that I saw was people being concerned that his incentives no longer align with Litecoin's incentives. So now he's essentially a benevolent leader, benevolent dictator is a common term, I guess. So like he has a lot of say and control, but he doesn't have a financial interest. So if he makes a decision that is not positively reflecting on Litecoin's price, that doesn't really matter to him. To be fair, he's probably filthy, stinking rich. And if Litecoin went to zero, it really wouldn't affect his day-to-day life anyway. So I think his interests are in the success of Litecoin as a whole, no matter what the Litecoin price is. And he's probably going to make decisions based on Litecoin's success as a network. However, price and network success do have some correlation, I think. So I thought that was an interesting and worth considering critique. Otherwise, I didn't see a ton of great critiques. My personal one would be one, like, if he had any care to disclose where he donated things to, like, was it to the Litecoin Foundation? Because that would be more interesting to me than if he donated it to some charity or whatever that he's personally attached to. Or maybe he had other options, and did he consider those? Like, what about a blind trust that unlocks those coins over time to be used in a way that promotes Litecoin? Like, that would be highly bullish.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, could you imagine if you put that in a smart contract, discloses exactly how much he had, and then unlocked it over time? Like like Dash has this system where the block reward is tied to developers in some way, that they get a bounty or a treasury, I think they call it. PIVX has the same thing. A lot of these coins do, where they pay their developers to develop on the coin, which makes sense. And then you get rid of things like conflicts of interest from third-party companies or whatever, like, you know, Blockstream. If you're concerned with that, a way around that is to pay the developers directly through the block reward, which makes perfect sense to me. So why not do that for Litecoin in some way, where you're setting up, like you said, a bounty, or even putting together some system that pays people who are developing on Litecoin? That part seemed a little strange to me. Like, why you would just do all that right now, you know?
Yeah. A little strange, seems a little fast, if you will. But at the same time, I don't think personally that it'll be a huge impact on the future of Litecoin. I think there are other things that are potentially bigger threats or benefits for Litecoin. So probably not that important to me, but was still a fascinating move. One more topic I wanted to ask about. This is something I looked up because if people are listening to this episode and they're like, man, I don't want to be part of Coinbase, or maybe they love Coinbase, whatever. But if they're looking for other fiat on-ramps, this is what I was personally looking at. So I looked into Gemini because I asked on Twitter where people on-ramp their fiat. I was overwhelmingly responded to that Gemini has been good. This is a product of the Winklevoss twins, who are Bitcoin billionaires. And one of the things I didn't know was whether it was FDIC insured. If everything goes up a creek, are your coins secured, insured by US government? There's rules around FDIC insurance that essentially guarantee you up to, I think, $250,000 worth of protection backed by the federal government. That's the basis of why that matters, and why it's nice, if you're going to be storing crypto online, to have something like that. And Gemini does have that. I looked that up, so I just thought I'd throw that in there as an aside.
The problem with Gemini is they have all these downtimes randomly, and their exchange isn't up nearly as often as GDEX is.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for a lot of liquidity in terms of being able to actively trade, maybe Gemini is not there yet, it seems. But if you're looking for a way to get money in, make an initial purchase of Bitcoin or Ethereum, they don't have Litecoin or other coins. I think it's just Bitcoin and Ethereum right now. if you're looking to make those initial purchases and then send them off somewhere else, or send them to a hardware wallet or whatever your goals are, then it is a viable on-ramping option. So I'm going to check it out, try it myself, and I'll try to follow up on that. We are nearly out of time in a completely news-based episode, but we did get a few listener questions. So I'm going to narrow these down. Mr. Phipps asked, how to set up a successful exit strategy from crypto. So how do you exit all crypto markets, if you will, in a responsible fashion?
I think the number one thing you have to think about is taxes. The number two thing you have to think about is how long is it going to take to get your crypto from hardware wallet to software, to an exchange, if it's stored off an exchange, which it should be. Number three thing you need to think about is whether or not you want to sell it on local Bitcoins or some other OTC method, depending on the size. You know, if you've got like 500 Bitcoin you want to sell at a certain price or whatever, you know, Bitfinex is fine for that, but OTC is also fine for that if you're connected with those kind of people.
Yeah.
I don't know. Those are my thoughts. It's pretty simple to do. You know, I see all these things about saying you can't get out of Bitcoin, you can't sell your Bitcoin, and this guy complaining about using an ATM to sell Bitcoin and that he has to give his KYC AML information. It's like, that's not a Bitcoin problem. That's a legacy banking problem to make sure you're not laundering money. That's not, you know, anything to do with crypto at all.
I think one of the big concerns people seem to have is they think the whole thing's going to come crashing down overnight. And lose, I don't even know what their concern is. Like if it's 20%, if that's what's concerning, or if it's 50% or 80%, but essentially being worried it's all going to disappear and vanish overnight. And I think that's probably mostly unfounded in terms of being a fear. Even in a Mt. Gox-like situation, even after a huge spike down, there's almost always throwback back up, if you will. Unless you can't lose a single dollar off of the top, which that's worrying if you can't. For the most part, you'll probably have, if we enter like a really significant downtrend market, you would probably have days, if not weeks, to get out within a reasonable percentage of the top. But you'll probably never nail the top. And if you want to nail the top, then you have to be monitoring this all the time and making a lot of guesses. And really, you can't predict the top until it's confirmed to be the top. So if you're using technical analysis, you're not.
If you want to get out at the top, if you want to get out at the top, you just set some crazy asks.
Yeah,
and let it be. Let the cards fall as they may. You know,
right.
Set your ask for 30,000 plus right now, and when it goes there while you're sleeping, you're gonna get out. Other than that, you know, don't worry about it. And this is a topic for another episode, but I see way too many people in crypto who shouldn't be investing the amount of money they are or the percentage that they have. You know, and people were telling me this when in 2013 when I was doing the same thing. So it's you know, a pot calling a kettle black at this point. But when I see people throwing all their money in alts instead of buying and holding something where they're going to make more money and not lose everything, it's just like it makes little logical sense to me. But anyway.
Yeah. Next question. Ethereum Addict said, do market makers really exist for illiquid coins? And how much insider trading do you think really goes on? So insider trading, you already answered, a lot, always, constantly, every coin. What about do market makers really exist for illiquid coins?
Yes, they do. I know for a fact they do. So,
okay. So a market maker is essentially someone who has enough control over a coin to dictate the price, either through bots or manual buys and sells, walls, whatever, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, or they just support price action, you know, so that the book is semi-filled in, you know, even on GDEX as a market maker, that probably a bot that algorithmically places buys and sells. And you'll see it when there's price action so that the spread isn't $1 million at once, you know. There's something for, well, there's always something for sale, there's always something to buy. From my understanding, that's what a market maker does. You know, it isn't necessarily to dictate price. That's probably going a little too far, but in many cases, that's what ends up happening.
Yeah, so I've seen...
Especially if they have a vested, if they have a vested interest in the success of the coin, then yes, I think the market maker does, in some respect, commit levels of insider trading where they're pushing things one way or the other.
I've seen an argument for making your trades. I think it's actually built into at least one coin's model. And for supporting the network, you could actually keep your trades public. So usually you can show an order or not based on conditions. So like your order doesn't even appear on the order book until certain conditions are met. But I've heard people say that it supports the overall health of the liquidity of the coin if you make those orders public. So if you want to sell something for $100 or whatever, 0.1 Bitcoin or whatever, making that a public order saying, if it hits here, I'm good. Like, you're essentially supporting the order book to show off the health and the liquidity of the coin. So I think that's kind of what a market maker does at a large scale.
And yes and no regarding that, because there are iceberg orders which trigger little by little on certain conditions when conditions are met. And then there's hidden orders, which on Bitfinex specifically, where you can place a big order without messing up what people are looking at on the order book. Because, you know, if people see a giant sell order, they're going to panic, right?
Right.
So you can place a hidden order, and that way it won't show up in the order book, but it'll go through the order book as if it was there, even though it doesn't show up on the order book.
And I think one of the easiest ways to see whether a bot is operating on a coin or not is, especially small coins, usually there's a spread and there's price action between the spread, the bids and the asks. And if you put a small test order that's, say, less than the ask but more than the bid, then just put a small test order there. And if instantly the order book adjusts itself so that there's another order in front of yours, that's probably a bot just making sure that it's always in front until someone goes in and eats that up. And I've never seen a situation where that doesn't occur. Like, anytime I've just tossed in a little order, it always takes a minute for that to occur, even if I wanted to basically make sure I was the first order on the books so that I could fill quickly.
Yeah, that'll happen on every exchange.
Yeah. My assumption is actually there's probably like just exchange wide bots so that they're operating on every coin just about. I don't know. And then
That's probably safe to assume. Yeah.
Bubble Trader. We'll finish this one. Finish with the I love the name Bubble Trader. What's been the biggest surprise within the crypto community this year?
Oh, man. I feel like there's a surprise every week. maybe just like the segue, the scaling thing as a whole, like how the cards fell, like, you know, Segwit 2x not ever going anywhere and Bitcoin Cash being a thing versus Bitcoin Unlimited, Bitcoin ABC. And we saw all these ways that scaling could have went with Roger Ver and their team of people. And it's interesting that a fork was chosen. The fork was successful in respect to not going to zero immediately. So that kind of was a surprise to me.
If I was going to answer this, I would probably say the global awareness. I thought it was reaching hyper extended levels when I was new. Like, obviously my own decision to get into crypto just this year is based on this. And based on digging in and looking at everyone out there talking about what their predictions were for the year in terms of overall market cap of the all crypto, in terms of what they expected Bitcoin's price to peak at for the year. All of those goals have been exceeded. All those predictions have been exceeded. Pretty much even the most ambitious ones that I saw. Seeing Bitcoin more than 20x in price from its lows on the year to the highs on the year is incredible. So, and then just the...
Yeah, if you would have told me in January that we'd be at 20k today, nearly, I would say there's no way. There's no way that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is probably honestly the biggest surprise price rise for sure,
and just the surge of new people interested, like just everybody. Like, this is not this is not nerds and tech people and whatever. It's everybody now. So that's the biggest surprise for me, because I wouldn't have expected that to happen so quickly. It was really seemed like a spark, and a lot of it to me came. Maybe it's my bias of being new. A lot of it really did seem to come out of these uncertainty settlements that happened over the summer. So, like, I was more uncertain about Bitcoin when I didn't understand what was going on with the forks in the summer. So essentially by price putting the kibosh on a lot of that, that helped solve it for me. So that's why bringing in all this new stuff with what's going on now is actually very strange, because it's almost like bringing these arguments back again. And I could actually see new volatility in the negative direction as a response to Bitcoin Cash being listed on Coinbase. Because as much as we want to say Coinbase is not Bitcoin, Coinbase is where a lot of people experience Bitcoin. And that's the only place. It is where you get your Bitcoin. So I think that's one of the things to watch going into the new year.
Especially now, when they're getting 100,000 user signups a day or whatever it is, over 13 million people at last estimate before they shut down that.
And being the most popular app in the App Store.
Yeah, that's definitely up there with surprises for sure.
Yeah, cool. I think we're going to stop it there for this episode. We'll try to be back soon and talk more technical analysis and other stuff. But this is your news episode, and we hope you enjoyed it. And Josh, where should people catch you and see all your stuff? You've continued to put out a lot of new content this week. So what you got?
I got Twitter always for forever. YouTube, Carpe Noctem. Twitter, Carpe Noctem. Brave New Coin, 3 articles a week minimum. The best TA you'll see on the internet. I think that's it.
All right. Now I'll link up.
I don't think you got anything
else.
That's
it. Yeah. I'll link up all that stuff, and then also follow Ledger Status on Twitter and subscribe to the newsletter. I'll try to send these episodes and also my own thoughts on what's going on every now and then. So check all that stuff out, and we'll catch y'all next time.
Monuments crumble in the blink of